Hey, what's happening? I'm Miles Kennedy, and you're listening to Metal from the Inside.
You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
Welcome back, metalheads, to a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and you guys are listening to episode 46 of the podcast. I hope that everybody is having a good start to their Friday and that you're navigating the craziness of the world. You know, every day it's like you wake up and there's something new. This last year and a half has just been crazy. It's just getting crazier, but I hope that everybody is doing well, that you're staying safe, and all of that fun stuff. But we are back again, like I said, with a brand new episode of the podcast, and this week I am bringing you guys my first ever conversation with vocalist, guitarist, songwriter, musician, all of the above, Mr. Miles Kennedy, and all of you know Miles, I'm sure, from his work with Alter Bridge, of course, with Slash, featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, and a bunch of other stuff that he has done over the course of his career. Miles has done a ton of session work. He has even dabbled a little bit in film, which we talk about in the interview. But I mean, Miles is just so great and is arguably the best vocalist that we have out there currently in the hard rock genre. I mean, he blows just so many people out of the water. He is so fantastic. And in the last couple of years, he's really been focusing on his solo career. He released his debut solo record, Year of the Tiger, back in 2018, and it was definitely a style that we usually haven't seen from Miles. It was more of an acoustic record. It was really intimate. A lot of the themes of the songs and the lyrical content that we saw was really personal, and we've, you know, since learned, Miles even discusses it a little bit in our conversation, that it was about the loss of his biological father when he was a child and really dealing with all of that. So that record back in 2018 was a really personal record, and I think we got to see a side of Miles that we hadn't really seen before with a lot of his heavier work with Alter Bridge and with Slash. But 2018's Year of the Tiger was a real success for him, and he got to do shows solo and finally get to show us all his solo work that he had been talking about. You know, it's really funny because I was, you know, prepping for this, and, you know, I'd found posts that date back all the way to like the early 2010s or, you know, late 2000s, when MySpace was a thing, and he was talking about then releasing solo music. But, you know, he got caught up a little bit in working with Slash and Alter Bridge still, and so he had never gotten around to releasing that music that he talked about on MySpace, which is crazy. But a couple of those songs that he had actually talked about ended up on this new record that was released back in May, on May 14th, actually, and this second solo record is titled The Ides of March, and is a really kind of more hard rock record. We discuss it as well, but he definitely tied the intimacy and kind of acoustic stylings that he had on Year of the Tiger with his more kind of hard rock style that we know him for on The Ides of March. So it's a really fantastic record, and he ended up writing this album during the pandemic. So a lot of the themes of the lyrics, you know, really relate to everything that we have gone through throughout this last year, and has a really kind of positive outlook on everything that we have gone through and the worry that we've dealt with. And just like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, you know, the constant, you know, new news that we're receiving. So I definitely recommend going ahead and listening to this record if you haven't had a chance to do so already. Again, it is titled The Ides of March by Miles Kennedy. It was out on May 14th, so be sure to go pick up a copy. But Miles was so fantastic. He is such a nice guy, and he was such a pleasure to talk to. And like I said, we touch a little bit on his film career. I'm sure that a couple of you will know what film I'm talking about specifically. We also talk about his time working with the guys in Led Zeppelin, you know, most specifically Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and Jason Bonham. And we also talk a little bit about what's going on with Slash and the rest of the Conspirators. So it was a really fun conversation. I'm looking forward to having Miles on again somewhere in the future. As always, I am here to fill you guys in on everything that's going on in the hard rock and heavy metal world before we hop into the interview. I am getting so sick and tired of reporting people passing and, you know, just the loss of our favorite musicians, but I think we all know that that's not going to stop anytime soon, but instead is going to get more frequent, which breaks my heart. But this week, unfortunately, the tragic news came out that Charlie Watts, original drummer for the legendary rock band The Rolling Stones, has passed away at the age of 80. And I'm sure if you guys are Rolling Stones fans, which I'm positive all of you pretty much are if you're listening to this podcast and are rock and metal fans, because I mean, a lot of the music that we love and we talk about, you know, came from the innovation that bands like the Rolling Stones, you know, had on the music scene. But besides the point, I'm sure that if you were a Rolling Stones fan, you had heard that Charlie Watts was actually going to sit out of this upcoming Stones tour that I believe was rescheduled for next year. But he basically had some health troubles and he had decided that, you know, it was only like 10 to 12 shows that got rescheduled. And, you know, the fans had waited long enough with the pandemic that he was just going to sit this one out and a drummer was going to come in and fill in for him and that he would be back on whatever, you know, whenever the next run was. Unfortunately, it looks like things took a bit of a wrong turn, and he ended up in the hospital where he lives in London and unfortunately passed away. And it came as a really big shock, I feel, to everybody. You know, Charlie was in really good health, it seemed. You know, he was never really, I believe, really big into any substances or anything. And he was definitely probably not the first person that I would have thought we would have lost from the Stones. But it's really upsetting, you know, to see the forefathers of, you know, our favorite music, you know, kind of leave us. It's really upsetting and it's really tragic. And it's just unfortunate because, you know, it's also just, you know, they're getting up there in age, you know, it's not like we're seeing these tragic, you know, deaths that we're losing people early. It's just, you know, he was 80 years old. It's just, it's expected at this point. And I think that's the very, very scary part of it all, is that I know that we're going to continue to see a lot of this in the next couple of years. It's just really, really starting to hit home, especially with the loss of Eddie Van Halen last year and everything. It's just, it's really tough for me to talk about because I'm really happy that I've gotten to see the quote-unquote end of some of these bands and this scene, but it's just really hard sometimes to realize that it really is going to continue to kind of come to an end, you know, that era of music, and we're not going to be able to see a lot of these bands the same way anymore. I was actually lucky enough to see the Stones with Charlie back in 2019. They played the Lincoln Financial Field, which is the big football stadium here in Philadelphia. And what just blows my mind still about the Stones is that they sold out a stadium of 60,000 people in the year 2019. It was just mind-blowing. And I'm really thankful that I had the opportunity to get to see Charlie with the band. I think that the Stones will continue with whoever this drummer was that's going to fill in for these upcoming tour dates next year. I think that they will continue to go out, but, you know, we'll see. I can't even imagine what the rest of the guys are feeling right now. You know, they've been playing together for the better part of 60 years, and I'm sure that they're really kind of going through a hard time. So I'm sending love to Charlie's family, his friends, his band, and I just hope that everybody who's severely affected by this is doing okay and is taking the time they need to grieve. But be sure to let me know what your favorite Rolling Stones record is, what you've been playing in memory of Charlie, because, you know, I'm sure that this is not the first time you were hearing of this. I'm a couple days after the announcement that he did pass away, but the Rolling Stones have definitely been on my playlist, so be sure to let me know what you've been listening to. And we also unfortunately lost Eric Wagner, who was the vocalist in the band Trouble, and we unfortunately lost Eric to a battle of pneumonia, which he was believed to have gotten from a case of COVID-19. They played a couple shows. His band, The Skull, had played a couple of shows, I believe in Chicago, a couple of weeks ago, and the band, I believe the entire band, came down with COVID, and he unfortunately did not handle it very well. He ended up developing pneumonia, and unfortunately, he passed away. And I'm sending again love to Eric's family, his friends, his band. It's just sad, man. It's been a brutal year. I feel like every episode I record, I am talking about the loss of somebody. It's just, it's been brutal. This year has just been brutal. But like, I try to think every time we do lose a musician is that even though we have lost them, you know, the music and the art that they've created will never be lost. You know, that legacy will forever live on with the fans and with people who discover their music, you know, years after it was created. So, you know, we're not really losing them in a sense. You know, they are made immortal with the art that they have given us. So again, sending love to anybody who is really affected by this. It's really tough losing your heroes, and you know, especially when someone's music just means so much to you. So in more ridiculous news, as we wrap up this little hard rock and heavy metal recap, the baby from Nirvana's Nevermind album cover, his name is Spencer Eldon, is suing Kurt Cobain's estate, as well as the rest of the band, you know, Nirvana, for child pornography, for the photo of him that was taken for the Nevermind album cover. I read this. A friend of mine, Chris, on Twitter, at Rock These Tweets, had shared this article, and like I am now, I am truly just at a loss for words. And what's so rich about this is that he has actually recreated the album cover about 3 to 4 different times. And the last time that he recreated the album cover back in 2016, Spencer actually wanted to take the photo naked. And the photographer had to talk him out of it because the photographer thought that it would be very strange. So after not only recreating the album cover 3 to 4 times, Spencer also has the word Nevermind tattooed across his chest. But now, almost 30 years after the album has been released, he is now suing Nirvana for child pornography. The kicker of this entire situation is that there's actually no law against, I believe it's, there's no law that's against, like, the photography of an infant in that manner. But his attorney and his lawyer is stating that he was sexualized because the dollar bill used in the image made the baby resemble a sex worker. It's just insane. And it's really funny. Somebody left a comment on one of the articles that I saw. I saw many different, you know, news stations pick this up, you know, write articles about it and everything. But it really looked like it was an article from The Onion or The Hard Times, you know, the satirical websites that post the really humorous titles. And I was really bewildered that it was completely real. It's actually kind of mind-blowing. And this really funny tweet was posted by Appetite for Distortion, which is a podcast, a Guns N' Roses podcast. I follow them over on Twitter. And he goes, breaking, student on cover of Use Your Illusion to sue Axl Rose and the estate of Italian Renaissance artist Raphael for violation of child labor laws. And I mean, it's like, are we really going to get that crazy? I mean, he compared Spencer Eldon, the baby on the cover, compared the album cover to Virgin Killer by the Scorpions, which Virgin Killer is a pretty, the original cover for that album is really obscene. I'm not even going to sit here and try to defend that one because it is pretty bad. But I don't think that Nevermind is on the same level as Virgin Killer. It's just, you know, and then he tried to say that he compared it to Balance by Van Halen, which I've never looked at any of these album covers besides Virgin Killer. That was too much. I love the Scorpions. And they did make a statement, but that was just crazy. But I've never looked at Balance or Nevermind once in my life and thought, man, that's like really offensive. I've just never thought that in any time I've ever looked at those album covers. And I think to compare that, you know, like child pornography and stuff to, I don't know. It's just, it's a really harsh accusation for somebody who has made a lot of profit off of that album cover. And now he is suing for about $150,000 from, I believe it's each member of Nirvana. including Kurt Cobain's estate. It's just crazy. It's crazy. I mean, I've seen a lot of different people comment on this article that I know and am friends with, or just random responses or people sharing it on Facebook. And I haven't seen one person go, man, he was totally right in suing him. It's just, it's really strange. But let me know your opinion if you think that it's just absolutely ridiculous, or if you think that he is well deserved in this lawsuit and what he's trying to do. But man, it's just, it's crazy. But that is just a little look into what's been going on in the hard rock and heavy metal world. As always, you can stay up to date with me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on Twitter at STaylorOfficial and on Instagram at SydneyAnnaTaylor. And I post a lot of different things on there. I keep you guys updated a little bit more. But be sure to go ahead and follow me there if you want to get, you know, real-time updates as to what's going on in the hard rock and heavy metal world. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to having you guys listen to my first conversation ever with Mr. Miles Kennedy, vocalist, guitarist, musician, songwriter, all of the above. He was really wonderful. And again, be sure to go ahead and purchase The Ides of March, his latest solo record released back on May 14th, 2021. And very quickly, before we hop into the interview, if you are loving the Metal from the Inside podcast, be sure to go ahead and leave a 5-star review on our Facebook page, our Apple Podcast page, or our Podchaser page. Every single review that is left helps immensely in, you know, having the Metal from the Inside podcast expand to new listeners and getting us out there. So if you really do love the episodes and the interviews and all of this fun stuff, be sure to go ahead and leave a 5-star review again on our Apple Podcast page, Facebook page, or our Podchaser page. You can also subscribe to the Metal from the Inside YouTube channel so you can actually watch the conversation between Miles and I, all of the Zoom calls and all of the interviews, the actual video conversations are available on the YouTube channel. And we are at actually 1500 subscribers, but we're getting up to 1600. So if you'd like to join the Metal from the Inside community over there, be sure to go ahead and subscribe, click on the little bell so that you get notifications for every video that I post. And yeah, it's cool sometimes to be able to actually watch the conversations if you have the time instead of just listen to them. But again, all the podcast episodes are available on every streaming service, so you can listen to, you know, Metal from the Inside on the go, whether you're walking to the train, in the car, taking a flight, waiting for your flight, any of that fun stuff. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music. The list just goes on and on. So it's available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, everybody. Without further ado, we are going to get right into my conversation with the legendary Miles Kennedy. Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. This week, I am super honored to have a vocalist, guitarist, musician, someone that you all know joining me on the podcast, Mr. Miles Kennedy. How you doing, Miles?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And first, I want to congratulate you. I know it's been a couple months, but on the release of the new record that came out in May, it's a great record. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's hard to believe it's already been out for a couple months. It's flying.
Yeah. So I want to, of course, talk a little bit about that album and kind of get into, you know, some of the details on that. I know that it's your second, you know, solo record. It was a follow-up to 2018's Year of the Tiger. And, you know, what's so interesting about you and your career is that you've had so many different, you know, roles that you've played in different bands. You know, you've been in Alter Bridge, you've been with Slash, you've done session work. But, you know, with 2018 and Year of the Tiger, you know, you were really able to kind of show the world you and your own music and everything that you've kind of been kind of holding back a little bit with your other projects. So in short, you know, what is it like to kind of have the world really see, you know, who Miles Kennedy is, you know, with this new music?
It's great. You know, it's like I look at the opportunity to make solo records as a chance to do the things you normally wouldn't be able to do in the context of your other bands. And so I try to take advantage of that. As you can tell, I have a definite love for blues and acoustic based music. So I try to bring a lot of that into the fold. And with this record, it rocks a little harder than the first one. I wanted to turn up the amps a little bit and have some, get some things off my chest in that way. But yeah, I mean, I think that it all falls on your shoulders. You know, you don't have a team to bounce ideas off of. It's just like I sit in my studio and put it together, and it's ultimately You know, if I want to screw it up, I'm going to screw it up on my own, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say this record is definitely has more of like a hard rock edge to it, but I've noticed that, you know, you did a really good job of like mixing what you did with Year of the Tiger with this record. Cause you know, you have a good balance of, you know, still that acoustic kind of intimate sound that you went for with that first record, but it's also got, you know, some like shreddy solos in there and some kind of really blues, hard rock oriented riffs. So what was the process of trying to combine those two kind of styles together?
You know, it's interesting because it's kind of a balancing act, and it's always being aware of wanting to make it so that you don't go too extreme in either direction and you find like a nice middle ground. So yeah, that's the, and a lot of that has to do with how I'll arrange the songs, like especially when I'm demoing the tracks, that especially with this record, I really spent a lot of time because I wasn't touring. I didn't have anything else to do. So I'd sit in my studio and go ahead and just kind of lay everything down on the demos, just so that when I handed it over to the band, they had a good idea of what I was hearing in my head. And yeah, so that it would be a matter of balancing, have enough acoustic guitar in the mix and acoustic parts and the lap steel, but then, you know, let's add a little bit more electric here. And let's, when we do this solo, we're going to play a few more notes, you know, just to kind of look, I'm more of a blues player at heart as far as a guitar player goes, but I definitely came up the ranks as a young player. And, you know, we were all listening to a lot of shred oriented guitar players, you know, in the, especially in the late 80s, you know, that was kind of the height of a lot of that. So that's definitely in my musical DNA, and to pull some of those tricks out, once in a while is fun. And I kind of dust off the cobwebs, which was a challenge on this record, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I know that you've talked a lot about the guitar that you used for this record and, you know, how things and the instruments that you use really influence the sound and how everything kind of comes together. So, you know, with that certain guitar, which I know is like the Nocaster, like the Fender that you used for this, you know, did that really kind of influence the more maybe kind of hard rock style that we see on this one?
I think it's interesting. The my love of the Telecaster, the Nocaster and all that, it definitely has a certain attack and like almost a twang to, you know, that's what Telecasters are known for. So that I think brings a certain amount of that country flair to some of these songs and kind of that spank as some players will articulate it. But, you know, but then there were songs that were written solely on the acoustic as well. And so you can hear that as, you know, in the context. I definitely didn't want to make a full on country album, because that, as much as I enjoy country and country blues and all that, I'm a rock guy, you know, and I felt like what, you know, I don't want to alienate a fan base that has known me for doing something for the last few decades. And suddenly he's like, what is this? You know? So it's once again, it goes back to that balance. It's that idea of you're going to kind of find you're going to create something, you're going to extract from all these different influences and make it your own thing. And part of your sonic brand, you know?
Yeah. And I also love so much about this record, kind of the lyrical content that you had, because it's very evident, you know, I know that it was said, you know, you wrote this from about like March to July of 2020. So when we were really kind of in the thick of everything and really uncertain. And I feel like the album definitely has a lot of themes of kind of dealing with that time and what that time meant to a lot of different people. And so that leads me to the title of the record, which I know a lot of us are familiar with, The Ides of March, you know, Julius Caesar, that whole kind of historical event. But, you know, was what we were going through kind of, you know, something that led you to not only naming the record that, but, you know, where was that inspiration coming from?
Yeah. I mean, I was actually on a walk with my wife one day, and this was early, I want to say it was like April or so of last year of 2020. And that phrase came to mind. And to me, that phrase has always implied a certain warning, like beware the Ides of March. Something impending doom was waiting just around the corner. And there was so much uncertainty at that point. We just didn't know what was going to happen. And I felt like that phrase really captured the essence of that. And so to me, it was obvious that there was a piece of music that I'd been working on that I knew was going to be epic and had a real weight to it, a real gravity to it. And it couldn't be some silly little title. It had to be something with a certain impact. And so I felt like, okay, Ides of March, perfect. Now we've got something for that particular musical body of work. And I also think I knew at that point that it would probably be the album title as well, because I think it just kind of summed it all up.
Yeah, because a lot of the song, the lyrical content is a lot about that. And I love the song In Stride, which I know is the first single, but and I know you've opened up about it, which I always, kind of commend a lot of musicians who have a platform, who kind of speak up about things like anxiety, because I struggle with that as well. And it's so whenever I hear anybody talk about it, I'm like, yes, someone's using their platform for that. But that song especially, I listen to the lyrics that one, and it's kind of so perfectly kind of captured the worry that I feel like so many of us were feeling during those first couple of months.
That's great to hear. I, as a writer, as an artist, you hope that you're creating something that not only is helping you, I write these songs with these that become mantras to help me in my life. Because yeah, I do. I struggle with things. I'm human. I've got my issues, things I'm working through. And so it's funny. There's so many songs that end up becoming, they heal me. They help me. And so it really means a tremendous amount to hear that people can then use those same lyrics in their own lives. I mean, wow. I mean, that's just what an incredible, it's a wonderful position to know that you can do something that for a moment might help another human being. Awesome. And that's the power of music, music or any art form. It's that escape. It's that catharsis, whatever it is. And so, music rules.
Yeah, I was going to say that, writing that album, must have just been like a big kind of outlet for you during that time. Because I know, like you said, you weren't really touring, it was kind of this just nobody seeing each other, kind of endless curiousness of what's about to happen. So for you, I'm sure it must have been kind of relieving to get that out and kind of onto paper and, onto a recording session.
Yeah, you have no idea just how cathartic it was. Yeah, I was just like everybody. I mean, I was kind of going down the rabbit hole there for a while, and it was getting pretty dark, And so having the opportunity to work through it with songs, look, and it was the same thing with my previous record with Year of the Tiger. It's funny. It was interesting. I was having a conversation with my stepfather recently about this, and that record is about when I lost my biological father as a kid and kind of the dynamics that ensued after that with the state of the family and whatnot, and our journey. And, I struggled for years with trying to make sense of all of that, but it really wasn't, I feel like the closure of all of that dynamic really didn't happen until I wrote Year of the Tiger. I mean, so what I'm saying is that being a songwriter in a lot of ways is the best therapist you can have. It's like, and it's free.
Right. That's the best part, right? Exactly. So, I knew a lot about that album. And I think it's, really great, because talking about when we go back to what I first asked you is, this has kind of given you this solo career, has given you that outlet, which I'm sure that you're able to do that too with Alter Bridge and with the songs you write with Slash. But this has kind of given you the complete kind of creative freedom to write about whatever you want, and that's whatever's going on with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely, you have that artistic license to, especially when it's under your name to, and it makes sense too to have it be a little more personal. I feel like I can do that to a degree in the other projects, and I have in the past, but there's something about when it's your name on the cover of the record, it's like, it should be more personal. It should be more about what's going on right here and right here. So, it's something that I had no idea. Like when I started doing solo records a few years ago, I don't think I realized just how beneficial it was going to be. Just on a psychological level for me, it's really been, it's been great to get the musical things off my chest, but also lyrically, it's been great to have the opportunity to put some of this stuff into words.
And I know it's kind of a very hard question because I've heard it's like picking a favorite child, but if you had to pick a favorite off of this record, is there one specifically that kind of stands out to you?
Probably the Ides of March, probably the title track. Yeah, that's one of those songs. It's funny, we're getting ready for to do a few tour dates.
Yeah.
In a few weeks, and so I've been rehearsing that song. And even when I'm just playing it all by myself, it really there's something about it where it's, I don't know. I just, it's one of those songs that at the end of the day, you know, years from now, if people ask me, oh, name your top five favorite songs of your career, I think that'll probably be on the list for me. It was a lot of work writing that one. I mean, it was definitely, a lot of people, they'll say their favorite songs or their biggest songs were written in 20 minutes. And that was definitely not the case with that one. There was another song along the journey with Alter Bridge called Blackbird. And it was the same sort of thing where that took months and months for us to finish. And it ended up being one of our favorite songs. And I think a lot of the fans' favorite songs, but it was the same thing with Ides of March. I think I started it in probably March of 2020. I don't think it was finished until almost July. So it took a while.
Yeah. I was going to say it's a really, you know, cinematic kind of song. It goes through a lot of like ebbs and flows. It starts out with that kind of dark, you know, beginning and then kind of lifts up a little bit and kind of opens up. So it's a really kind of cinematic track on that record.
I appreciate that. That's how I, you know, when I hear it, that's kind of what I think as well. I mean, I see it in very cinematic. It tells a story.
And you mentioned the tour dates, which is very exciting because I feel like tour dates just have not been a thing for the last year and a half. So, you know, to see somebody go out on tour, it's really cool. So how do you feel to kind of be really close to your return to the stage after, you know, almost 2 years?
I feel good. I'll admit I'm staying cautiously optimistic. Yeah. It seems like things are changing daily. So my fingers are crossed, and we'll see how it all plays out. But right now all systems are still go. So hopefully we can get her done, as they say.
I know. It's just, it's like every day I wake up, it's like this for everybody, but it's like every day I wake up and I see another like tour cancellation. And it's just like, boo, I can't believe this. It's ridiculous. But a fun thing I really wanted to talk to you about, because I'm not sure how often, I'm sure a little bit you get asked about this. But one of my favorite movies is Rockstar. And I know that you have the cameo at the end, which is like so great. I remember, you know, I was like an Alter Bridge fan and a Slash fan. And I watched that movie and I was like, holy shit, that's Miles Kennedy. But it's so cool. And what I love so much about that is that, you know, at the end, you know, for those who aren't familiar, you know, your character kind of gets up, you know, he takes over for Mark Wahlberg, who is this, you know, rock singer. So you're kind of singing for your favorite band at the end there. And that is kind of almost in a way gone into your actual reality. You know, I know that Led Zeppelin thing was a very kind of like brief thing that happened, but I mean, you got to sing with the guys in Led Zeppelin. So like, how did it feel to kind of have that, you know, come to a little bit of a reality for you?
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because that film, if someone would have told me when I shot that film that this is essentially going to be the story of your life, it really is. It's become kind of like a, you know, it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, look, that was crazy. I mean, that was the fact that I was standing in a room with those guys, for a few days, it could have been for a minute and I still would have been surprised. I will never forget. I try to replay that experience as much as I can, because time often has a way of eroding memories. And that's something I want to just keep. I wish is that they had the technology at this point to like plug some sort of cable into your brain and you could download it onto a hard drive, because I don't want to lose those memories. That was just magnificent. That was just so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, you think with all the stuff that they're coming out with now, I don't think technology like that's too far behind.
I think you're right, actually.
I know, it's like, it's weird, you know, like the last year, you know, doing Zoom interviews, you know, used to be in person, and now it's just like, it's accustomed to like just be on technology. So I think that the memory device is just like a few short years away.
Elon Musk, get on it.
But yeah, I absolutely love that movie. And I think, you know, even the stuff that you've done with Slash, I'm sure, you know, getting to sing a lot of those songs, you know, that have become so just famous and in culture and everything, you know, must just be really cool. And it's kind of funny, like you said, how that fiction kind of became a reality for you.
Oh, absolutely. I remember the first time in rehearsals, this was like 11 years ago, when we were getting ready to do the first few dates with Slash and the Conspirators. And I think we were rehearsing Paradise City. And I remember standing in the rehearsal room, and Slash was to my left, and I was just like, once again, it was the same thing that I felt about 3 years prior or 2 years prior with over in London with Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones and Jason Bonham. And it was just like, how is it that I'm like Forrest Gump? How am I getting put in these positions? This is crazy. Like, why me? It's great. I'm not complaining. It's just like, wow, it's crazy.
Is there anything on the horizon for any new music with the Conspirators, or is that kind of a, we'll revisit that when things start to kind of open back up a little bit?
Yeah, I think the announcement came out recently that there's a record coming out on Gibson Records. No specific time as far as when it's going to be released. The date hasn't been made public, but yeah, we've got songs in the can, as they say. So that'll be exciting.
Amazing. I am so excited to hear it. And The Ides of March is such a great record. Everybody be sure to go ahead and purchase that. Give it a listen. Thank you so much, Miles, for your time and coming on the show. It's so appreciated.
My pleasure, Sydney. It's been a lot of fun.
You guys just finished listening to my interview with Mr. Miles Kennedy. Again, vocalist, guitarist, musician, songwriter, all of the above. He is a man of many talents, and you guys know him best, of course, from his work with Alter Bridge and Slash. But like I mentioned, and like we talked about a lot in the interview, Miles is currently celebrating the release of his newest solo record, released back in May, entitled The Ides of March. So if you have not heard the record and are interested now after hearing our lovely conversation about it, be sure to go ahead and purchase it, give it a listen, support Miles, and be sure to go ahead and catch him on tour. He has a bunch of dates scheduled for September. I will be at the show in Philadelphia at Underground Arts, so be sure to come and say hi if you're in the Philadelphia area and come see Miles and support. If you can, be sure to purchase a CD, some merchandise, you know, whatever you can, if you can. I know that you guys don't really need reminding, but it's been a really tough year for artists, so anything helps. But of course, do so while staying safe. I hope that these shows in September for Miles do actually happen. My fingers are crossed. I have a lot of different shows coming up in September, and I'm hoping that everything's all systems go, which they are still right now as I'm recording this episode. So if you are going to go check out the Miles Kennedy tour, be sure to let me know. I'll be updating you guys and, of course, giving you guys an in-depth review of the show, whether that's here on the podcast or an article over on Brave Words where I am a contributor. I will keep you guys updated, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the songs live on this record and, of course, checking out Miles live. I've seen him with Slash before, but never solo, so I'm really looking forward to that. But Miles is such a down-to-earth guy, though, and that really comes across in every conversation and interview that he does, so he is welcome anytime. It was such an honor to have him on, and I'm looking forward to the next time that he makes an appearance on the Metal from the Inside podcast. Be sure to let him know that you checked him out over here and that you'd like to see him on again in the future. If you really love what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal from the Inside podcast, the best place to do so is www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here you can click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. Every single dollar received goes directly back into creating even better content for you guys, so everything goes right back into the podcast. If you would like to donate and also receive some super sick merch, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com, type Metal from the Inside into the search bar, and here our flame logo tee will pop right up. You can get the Metal from the Inside logo on a bunch of different styles, including t-shirts, tank tops, hoodies, zip-ups, camo prints, women's cut tees, literally everything that you can imagine, you can get the Metal from the Inside logo on, and that is a great way to support. The profits for that go right back into the podcast as well, and you get some really cool merchandise to wrap the podcast with. So that is another option. And like I always mention, the podcast is available to listen to for 100% free. No donation is required. We are available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, literally wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on our YouTube channel. So you can go subscribe there. You can subscribe on your preferred streaming service. No donation is required, but I always like to have the option there for those who are interested. If you would like to keep up with Metal from the Inside, the best place to do so is at www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and we also have an official Facebook page. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. I'm always sharing hard rock and heavy metal updates, what's going on with the podcast, with Metal from the Inside in general, everything that's coming up and more. So if you would like to stay up to date and also just chat hard rock and heavy metal, you can go ahead and reach me again on Instagram and Twitter. You can also shoot me an email by clicking the contact tab on Metal from the Inside's website. I really thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to another episode. I'm so excited for my episode next week, and I actually talked a little bit about it on my Twitter page, but I'm not going to say who will be on next week just yet. I'm working on the episode and I want to, you know, put out a really kind of heartfelt promo about it. But this interview is so near and dear to my heart and is something that I just couldn't believe I had the opportunity to do. And I think that as music fans and fans of this genre, I think that you guys will all be really touched by this interview as well. It was probably the most meaningful interview that I've ever done and is something that is really, really important to me. So I think that it's really going to touch your hearts just as much as it touched mine. And I'm excited to let you know a little bit more about that as the week goes on. But be sure to keep an eye out for next week. Episode. It's going to be a good one. And again, I think that you guys are really going to get something out of it and that it's going to mean a lot to you guys too. So stay tuned for that. Again, thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. And I hope that you guys enjoyed my conversation with Mr. Miles Kennedy. Be sure to tweet him, comment on his Instagram, whatever your heart desires, and let him know that you checked out this interview with him over here on Metal from the Inside and that you would like to see him on the podcast again in the future. I thank you guys so, so much for being a part of the Metal from the Inside community, and I will see you guys right here next week for episode 47 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. See you next week, and rock on.